Let's engage in some table talk on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Pastor Larry Conway keeps alive Martin Luther's custom of table talk, even as Garrison Keillor preserves the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Table talk. Now, that's something we all are familiar with, but it has a greater significance in the life of Martin Luther, doesn't it, Pastor Conway?
Yes, it does, along with a number of other people.
Mm-hmm.
But in Luther's later life, he had the habit of inviting people over to his house, the Luther House, and then they would move to various restaurants and taverns and things of that nature. And they would get together and they would talk about their faith, and they would talk about what's going on in the day, and they would talk about their aches and pains and everything else, and enjoyed each other's company with the beverages of their choice.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of that got written down, didn't it?
Yes. Luther, in many ways, was a victim of the press, one of the first. For example, the 95 statements or theses that he put on the door of the Castle Church in Wittenberg. They were put there for the university to debate. That's all. It was a printer who saw them and said, wow, this is good stuff. I can make some money off of this, and printed it without permission throughout Europe. And that's really what sparked the Reformation.
Well, that made a sea change in his life, didn't it?
It did. It did. Unintentioned.
Mm-hmm. It might not even have happened without the press, right?
I mean, Quite possibly,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about table talk. I think everybody knows Luther's Small Catechism if you're Lutheran. I had to memorize the "This is most certainly true" parts for 2 years when I went through catechism, but confirmation. And everybody knows Luther's table talk, but I don't think people know what exactly the talk was. What might be said that would be written down? Is it like the 95 Theses? Are these pronouncements, or are these questions to debate or to talk about?
No, not at all. Luther had the curse of being famous. And since he was famous, he was a great man. And since he was considered a great man, someone was there copying down everything he said.
As they remembered it.
Yes. And unfortunately for Luther, that included some rather pithy, we would call them even crude statements by today's standards.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he was in the tavern and had had a few beers, he might have let something out he might not otherwise have done. And here's this guy faithfully writing it down and preserving it forever. In fact, there's 3 volumes of table talk, if I remember correctly, in Luther's works.
Yeah, and some apparent contradictions, too. That's what happens when different people hear or see the same thing. Their own version of it tends to come out, and so you're never quite sure what's going on. Go ahead, Roald.
He was aware that these things were being copied down, wasn't he?
Yes.
So are these the private Luther, or was he aware he was being a public? Was he aware that these were going to be printed?
I think he was aware that someone was scribbling in the corner.
Right.
But I don't think he was aware that they were going to be published.
But how soon were they published after? Were they published as soon as people got enough of them to?
I think it was much later. I don't think it was early on, if I remember correctly.
But what about table talk at Trinity? What's going on there?
Well, we thought instead of us staying in our doors, let's go out into the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So we started table talk, and we plagiarized freely from Martin Luther's experience. We gather at a local restaurant. Whatever you choose to eat or drink is up to you. And we talk about issues of the day. We talk about faith. There's no agenda, no theme. I do a little one-page cheat sheet, if you will, of religiously themed topics. But if we don't use them, that's fine. That's just to help get the ball rolling.
Is anyone sitting in the corner writing things down?
Thankfully, no. But in the days of cell phones, you never know.
So you have no book or assignment to read ahead of time?
Nope.
This is really table talk, just like Luther.
Exactly.
Well, then, does who has the power to set the conversation to start it? Do you always begin?
I'll say something like, "Where shall we go today?"
Mm-hmm.
And then I become quiet, and someone starts with a topic, and I see my role not to dominate. My role is keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Well, what might a topic or two be?
Oh, gosh, it could be what's going on in the nation recently, Las Vegas shootings, for example. It can go from heavy topics to very light ones, and may do that in the same night.
Do you attempt to draw from whatever idle conversation comes up, do you attempt to set that in some kind of ethical context, religious context, or something? Is there a teaching function for you in these table talks?
As the opportunity arises, in other words, if other folks are doing that, teaching function, spiritual function, then I'm just happy to be quiet and let that happen. But if we get off on a subject and I'm thinking, our faith says something about this, I'll interject that and kind of keep that perspective going.
Who makes up the circle? Is it the constant? Does it change all the time?
It tends to be constant between a group of about 25 people, but it is open for anyone, anytime. It very intentionally was meant not to be a closed group, but an open group.
Uh-huh. Well, you're lucky Tweet hasn't intruded into that group.
I almost did that night. It sounded like we were at the next table over at Moe's Brew and Burger when this troop came in there, and a lot of them were my friends and former students, and that looks like a really interesting group. So that's exactly why you're here today, not just the Reformation, but that interesting group of table talk. Do you ever bring in a Lutheran perspective into the discussions? What would Luther say about this particular topic?
Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes using humor, the sin boldly for the glory of God, one of his well-known sayings or better-known sayings, which actually had a lot to do with what do you do in a situation where you have a tough choice to make?
But
that's what he was
addressing. You don't follow the lectionary.
No, nope.
Or anything like that. It has nothing to do with you surreptitiously getting sermon material.
No, but ideas that may be turned into sermons down the road, yeah, sure, you betcha.
You have quite a structure over at Trinity, looking at the staff. I know John Wherry, for example, who used to work here, handles music. How about attendance, not only at the table talk, but at church? So many mainline churches are talking about a slow decrease in attendance.
We're seeing that too, along with just about everybody else, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I saw an interesting study online recently that showed that even the so-called mega churches or the big box churches, as they're sometimes called, over the past 10 years nationally has had the same rate of decline
sometimes
as Catholic and Protestant churches.
Sometimes even more precipitous.
Yeah.
I mean, they rose fast, but they're, some of them are really declining fast too.
I think, though, when you look at that, I know that I've talked to several pastors who are fretting about the loss of whatever it is that brings a person to church. But I think it may be something other than that. I think it's the iPhone, the computer, the television set, that people are less likely to congregate for anything. They'll show up maybe for a rock concert or something like that. That's once a year or twice a year thing, but for steady attendance at something, that seems to be falling off not only in religious circles, but in fraternal groups and everything else.
Yeah, it's broader than just organized religion. There is a real sense of not wanting to be part of a group on a permanent basis, of having a commitment, of joining, of being a member. But if you want help for this particular purpose or gather for this over here, that seems much more open. Mm-hmm. That was part of why Table Talk is intentionally not a set group. There are no dues. There are no officers. There are no membership requirements. You come when you wish.
It seemed to me, as I recall, when Luther got started, he was ready to do away with an awful lot of things, the priesthood, the mass, and so on. And as you talk about Table Talk, when Roel brought this up, I thought that's almost going back to the Jesus people when the ministry first started, when people would gather usually at a prominent woman's home, mm-hmm. and they'd come in and they'd have a meal, and they'd listen to somebody's experience. And doesn't the Table Talk rather closely align to that?
In its informality, perhaps. But when the early church gathered in people's homes, you would have a letter read by Paul. There would be a leader who would give a message. At Table Talk, we may not even mention Scripture on a given evening.
Mm-hmm.
There's no person giving a message. We learn from one another. We grow together.
And what is the purpose of Table Talk? Is it merely to build some kind of social cohesion? Why would you do that?
I would say that we try to bring God to people and people to God,
mm-hmm.
in a more accessible way. I was raised agnostic. And I remember the first times I went into a church, the first few times, it was kind of scary. What are they doing there? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was dating this gal who said, it's safe, come on. So I went in with her, you know, young man, dating girl, you know where I was going.
Yeah.
but it was kind of, what goes on here? And are they going to be upset with me? Am I going to do some faux pas and everybody's going to point their finger at me? And mm-hmm. we're in a restaurant in a much more relaxed atmosphere, you don't have those worries, at least to the same extent.
We talk about fellowship, the idea of a community, people being together, and it seems to me that Table Talk is kind of an expression of that mm-hmm. desire to create a fellowship. How about attendance at that? Does that hold as well, or does that also slide a little bit over time?
That has grown and held rather well for Maybe. Table Talk. But of necessity, it has to be a fairly small group.
Uh-huh.
If you have 20 people in the same room, it's kind of hard to wait your turn.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you break up, of course, into smaller groups, which I've tried to do on a couple occasions, saying, we're getting kind of big. Let's set up two separate tables. And I've been almost unanimously overruled on that. Folks wanted to keep it together.
How do restaurants accommodate to that?
Different restaurants, different places. Some have separate rooms. Some have corners or niches like Moe's does.
Well, you were at a huge square table, so all of you – I mean, you all sat in essentially a circle.
Yeah.
Or a square.
Right. We make it a square because the long, narrow table, you really
right.
don't see each other.
Right.
So we set up a square. We'll do it ourselves if they'll let us. Sometimes they'll set it up for us. It all varies. And we move around from restaurant to restaurant every few months. There's a young woman by the name of Dana Norris who helps me with that.
Uh-huh. What have you learned from Table Talk?
No, that's a good question. The diversity of opinions and that we can disagree without being disagreeable.
I think that is the hardest thing and the one important thing to learn today is how can groups who disagree talk instead of stop talking to each other?
The lack of tolerance is the most appalling thing you find. But I suspect human beings have always been intolerant. you know, animals are intolerant if you have to be of their group or you're out. And we still have those deep instincts in us. Our higher nature wants to rise above that, but our instincts work against it. So any mechanism you can use to disagree in a patient way and try, the difficulty is trying to see where the other person is coming from and whether or not there may be some validity in their argument.
And that means to listen and not just to speak, to hear what the other person's saying and not be formulating your next clever comeback while they're talking. I use the example of that we need to get to the point where when we're talking with someone else, we'll say, "You're all wrong. You're all wet. I couldn't disagree with you more. Let's go do lunch."
Right.
You know, I've found that works. When someone really gets hostile on the internet or something, I'd say, "Why don't we have lunch?" And I never hear from them again. Because there's always that danger. You'll listen.
Some group in San Francisco, a left-wing group, invited white supremacists to have lunch instead of protesting each other.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out fine. I mean, they talked. They didn't change any opinions, but at least they were able to sit down and share a meal.
Yeah.
That's a Lutheran secret, isn't it? Food?
Of course.
It's hard for Lutherans to discuss without food somewhere.
Mm-hmm. And lots of it.
And occasionally drink.
Is this table talk tradition at Trinity, is that found in other churches?
Yes. You may hear it called theology on tap. You see it in various places around the country. I'm not sure if anyone else currently is doing it in the Quad Cities, but it's quite likely.
Okay, well, Pastor Larry Conway has introduced us to something that happened 500 years ago when Martin Luther had his table talks, and you have them again at Trinity in Moline.
Give us a call. We'll be happy to tell you when and where we are.
Thank you very much, Pastor Larry Conway of Trinity Lutheran. And right now, here's Garrison Keillor of the Writer's Almanac. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. I suppose we have to get you out dining a little more often so you can overhear interesting things.
Well, we have interesting conversations sometimes, but just my wife and I.
Oh, yeah. That's true. Conversation is, I mean, that is the oil that keeps the social machine going. If you can just talk, that's the whole thing. Let's let diplomats talk rather than nations fight. It makes for a much better world.
It seemed like a great format for that Trinity group to have.
Table
to sit
talk.
There, you know, I assume they read a book or they read an essay or something or did a passage of scripture, but it's just open.
You know, while we're on the subject of Lutheran table talk, there is a dazzling book out right now by Eric Metaxas, I guess his name is. He is the one who wrote a highly praised biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer.
Uh-huh.
And now he addresses Martin Luther. And look at this book.
Wow.
I am not through it by a long shot, but already digging into it, I am absolutely taken not only with the depth of his knowledge, but the ease with which he tells the story. And I believe this has to be one of the best things that's ever been produced by Martin Luther. He starts out by dismissing some fictions about Luther, including some that Luther himself engendered.
Right.
About his early years, about the nature of his father's business, his mother.
Right.
Why he changed his name from Luther to Luther. It is a fascinating book. And I think on the 500th anniversary of the Reformation, this is something that Lutherans especially, but everybody ought to take a look at, because this is a man who really changed the world. It shifted with the publication, as we heard, of the theses that he put on the church door, And in no time at all, it's amazing. It's what happens today in our age of television. Television can boost a nobody into a somebody almost overnight.
Right.
But with Martin Luther, it was the printing press that did it.
Right.
And this is a life that really ought to
be. Well,
it's
the same thing Twitter can do today, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. What's your take on that? Is this rapid spread of disinformation as much as information good or bad?
Well, I mean, that happened back then, too. There was disinformation, right? I mean, but, yeah. You know, and when monks had to copy everything down with ink, it just took longer to spread disinformation.
That's
the minute
true.
The printing press comes out, right?
Yeah, and everyone has access to it, and you move from what was then Latin, all educated people spoke and read Latin, and to put it in colloquial language, boy, that was a revolution. But this is the book. If you really want to know something about Martin Luther.
And it's just called Martin Luther?
That's it. Martin Luther. It's got his picture on here. Some of the political intrigue that was involved in this change in religious observance. All of that is packed into this book. And I heartily recommend it to anyone who'd like to know something more about what happened 500 years ago, what all that really meant. So that's Eric Metaxas' book, Martin Luther, and published by Viking. And the price on it, I imagine you get a discount somewhere. It's about $30, but you'll find sales. Anything in your...
Well, I've came across an interesting book that I read just because I found it at Borders, and because in the title is the word penumbra, and the and the eclipse that just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And this has nothing to do with an eclipse, but it's called Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore. And it's by a writer that I've never heard before. I don't even have his name down. Robin Sloan, I think it is. If you love bookstores, this is a wonderful book. It's a bookstore that's three stories high with ladder that goes up three stories, which you know is impossible.
Yeah.
And a girlfriend who comes in to the guy who's working in the bookstore who works for Google. And so what you get is a contrast between the world of Google with all its employees and its computers and old-fashioned books.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a tug of war between – there's a mystery here. There's a book that is in mysterious code, and people who come into the bookstore secretly are trying to solve the code. And the girl who works at Google says Google could solve that in a minute. We'll just connect all the computers in the world together. And so it's a race between what Google can do and the internet can do and what old-fashioned books can do.
Okay. What's the name again?
Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore by Robin Sloan.
Sounds like a place to go.
Wonderful book.
And we'll head for the exit now, and we hope you'll join us again. Roll Tweet, and I'll be back next week for another session of Scribble.